We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams.
Television is reality, and reality is less than television.
All necessities provided, all anxieties tranquilized, all boredom amused.
Feature presentation, The Pause Button, with your host, Borzoi Boskovich.
His mind was haunted with the many and strange tales which he had heard, attributing mysterious, if not supernatural, endowments to these malls, as well as the grandson here present as his two immediate ancestors. Mr. Pynchon's long residence abroad and intercourse with men of wit and fashion, courtiers, worldlings, and free thinkers, had done much towards obliterating the grim Puritan superstitions, which no man of New England birth at that early period could entirely escape. But on the other hand, had not a whole community believed Maul's grandfather to be a wizard? Had not the crime been proved? Had not the wizard died for it? Had he not bequeathed a legacy of hatred against the Pynchons to this only grandson, who, as it appeared, was now about to exercise a subtle influence over the daughter of his enemy's house? Might not this influence be the same that was called witchcraft? And this is The Pause Button, and I'm your host, Borzoi. Joining me is Alex McNabb.
Black Philip, a crown grows out his head. Black Philip, to Nanny Queen is wed.
And joining us later will be Potato Smasher. He got caught in traffic, and, well, we didn't want to wait. The witching hour waits for no man. So, of course, we're talking about, if you've not looked at the title and you've couldn't pick up on the clues we were just dropping, we are talking about it's listed as both 2015 and 2016. I'll just say 2016. The 2016 film, The Witch, sometimes called The Vavitch, because they opted for two V's to form a W.
Yeah, it's a movie about a goat.
Yeah.
Black Philip, the most awesome goat that ever goated.
There's actually a...
He's the greatest goat of all time.
He's the goat. But there's actually in Michigan, there's a cider mill that's got I think it's more of a seasonal cider, but they have a cider called Black Philip that takes the goat's head as the label for it. I think it's like an apple cider with it's blood orange and cranberry, I think, as I recall. It's pretty good. It's actually quite good. But I'm a big fan of apple cider, so.
And too, I'm actually a big fan of taking apple cider and then mixing that with cinnamon whiskey.
Oh, that sounds good. There's actually a drink that was promoted by Angry Orchard, which they combined with a Fireball called Angry Balls.
I've had that. It is good.
Real college drinking hours up in here.
Yeah, no, for real.
Actually, before we even get into the movie, I haven't done a Halloween episode, I think, in 2 years. I've done an episode on the Roald Dahl movie, The Witch, and I've done an episode on slasher films. And I think those were the only two Halloween movies I've really done, strictly Halloween movies I've done. And just figured we'd talk a little bit about Halloween. How's your 31 Days of Halloween going, Alex?
I want to do like a top 10 of Halloween horror films, and I went into a little digression recently about how like what I would put on that list is not necessarily like the best horror ever, just horror films that fit in with that particular holiday, with like Samhain and Halloween. Like I don't like to have alien horror mixed into it. Like that's
alien. Alien horror, like Event Horizon, or what do you?
Well, Event Horizon is not alien horror. Event Horizon is actually supernatural, and Event Horizon has, like,
this is true.
Demonic themes in it. So, and that was the point I made, was, like, Event Horizon I accept, but I don't put aliens in there, because aliens is just straight up, like, alien horror.
What do you think, because you had asked me if I wanted to do a top 10 as well, but the thing is, just because my wife's and I schedules, we're just able to watch maybe one or two movies a week, and if we're going to watch something, if we've seen it before, we want to watch something that's good, because we haven't seen all the movies, but on a whim, because she had never seen it, we watched Videodrome together. She liked it a lot.
I fucking love that movie.
Yeah, no, it's a great movie, but would you? It's one of those movies you never really think of like classifying. You never see Videodrome on a horror movie list for Halloween. Would you accept this movie as a Halloween movie?
Yeah, sure. I mean, maybe it's just my personal bias, but I would accept it because I fucking love it. It's great. Okay. It's great. It's body horror, and it's got a like one for it. I really like Videodrome. I'm a huge fan.
Well, I guess speaking of kind of the Halloween season, just, you know, a lot of movies tend to set like their Halloween movies either in the Midwest, like, which is what happened with the film Halloween, or really more classically. And it's because you have writers like Edgar Allan Poe. I think he was a New Englander. Edgar Allan Poe, Nathaniel Hawthorne, H.P. Lovecraft. Horror tends to be a New England genre, which is very relevant. And then, of course, if you want to include Stephen King and all that, whatever your feelings are about him, there's just something about New England that really can bring the spooky out, which is what we're talking about here with Robert Eggers.
A New England folktale.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you can understand some of the reason why there's something dark about, and I know like the South's got the Southern Gothic and they have Southern horror as well, but there's just a strong association Halloween time with New England, and it's that combination of just the old land of it, some of the writers that came out of it, I think maybe the climate as that, the history though, especially the way that it was colonized, and the truly don't go near the woods is very synonymous with New England. There's something very Lovecraft country about it.
Yeah. And that's definitely a theme in this movie, is to stay out of the woods. The woods are bad. There's like a primal fear of the woods.
Well, and that's what horror is about on some level. Horror takes a number of different forms. It can be fear of the unknown, but it can also represent the horrifying struggle of civilization versus the wild, of what happens when you're cast out of civilization and the fear of becoming feral and wild again, and what that, or if not necessarily that, what exists out there. I mean, when you go back and look at a lot of our European folk tales and fables and stories and the like, there's always, in a lot of them, this theme of what's in the woods, and whether it's like with the Irish, with the changelings, or within the, you know, or the fear of the wolves in continental Europe, there's something to always be to look out for when you enter the woods. Or Baba Yaga in Russian folklore, which is a witch in her own right.
Yeah, but this is like an age-old story of purity spiraling too hard on the forum, and then you get kicked out, and the next thing you know, you're on the sub forum, and you get your entire family destroyed by witches. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a one way of looking at it.
You gotta be careful with that purity spiraling; it'll get you in trouble.
Well, I guess that's a way to kick this off. That's what I actually loved this movie. I was, when I told people I was doing a pause button about The Witch, I saw a lot of divided reactions about it. There were people that loved it. There were people that hated it, and generally their hatred for it was more, well, it was boring, or I just didn't like it. And I think enjoyment of it will be much greater if you have an understanding or appreciation for the history of that time period. And I've been studying the Puritans quite a bit as of late, and so I've just kind of been in that mindset of understanding what they were about. And that's where, I guess, like, I'll just say that right now. I've said this on other programs, but Puritanism has a very incorrect understanding in our modern parlance. It doesn't mean like being opposed to, like, just strictly like being like a sexual prude or something like that, which is a very, they were, what Puritans were, is they were Calvinist purity spiralers. That's what they were.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about this, but the Gutenberg printing press enabled the Bible to be distributed widely. Maybe I was talking to Mike about it. And this essentially meant that you had these factions that started reading the Bible themselves. Is the take that we have kind of come to is that the Catholic Church filtered the Bible and used Greek philosophy as a hammer to beat this thing into submission and make it into something reasonable. And then after the Bible was widely printed, you had people doing their own interpretations and bringing back some of that natural irrationality found in scripture, some of the crazy, weird stuff.
Yeah.
And that was my experience reading the Malleus Maleficarum so far, is this guy, he's being a biblical literalist, and he's reaching some conclusions that are actually against the Catholic Church dogma at the time, particularly regarding witchcraft.
Yeah, the book, I believe, was printed in the late 15th century. And it was printed just like a few decades before the Protestant Reformation would start. The Lutheran and his followers, they had originally were trying to do, that's why it was called the Reformation. They were trying to reform the Catholic Church and got excommunicated for it. Now that church followed its own history, but with John Calvin and and other theologians like him, that's where they really brought in this idea of purifying the church, because it's not enough to reform the Catholic Church. Some of them came to inevitable conclusion, like, well, the church was just corrupted from the start, or it was corrupted pretty early on, so we just have to start all over and start anew. And then they eventually gets to the point where it was like, well, do we even really need to completely interpret scripture like that? Where that's where you start to see like the even goofier and goofier Protestant mm-hmm. offshoots that would occurred during it. But for England, when the Church of England came about, because that came about through Henry VIII, the Church of England was basically just Catholicism with the Pope cut out of the picture. Functionally, it was just the Catholic Church in all other respects, just not in communion with Rome. And then with a lot of people who had began to adopt Calvinism, that's where the Puritans came from, because their position with the Church of England was that, well, we need to purify this church of all of its Roman Catholic trappings because it's corrupting it. And then when they couldn't get any traction, a lot of them just said, well, we're just going to go to the colony and start over and go create a shining city on the hill over in the Massachusetts Bay Colony and the Plymouth Colony.
Yeah, and to tie into the film, that seems to be the way that the movie is setting things up, is that you've got a religious sect that is basically establishing this outpost, this colony. And, well, what happens when you bring a bunch of purity spiralers together? You get them spiraling in their own community, and then they get excommunicated by their own brothers.
Yeah, this is set very early on in the... Because I think it's technically it's supposed to be the Massachusetts Bay Colony. There's two different colonies. There's the Plymouth Colony, and there's the Massachusetts Bay Colony. I think this is technically supposed to be the Massachusetts Bay Colony, which... I think the Plymouth Colony started in 1620, and the Massachusetts Bay Colony started about 8 years after that. And so I think this is what the early, around the 1640s, this is set. So this is very, very early on in the colony's history. Oh, no, so this is the Plymouth Colony. I just looked mm-hmm. up. So this is actually the Plymouth Colony, which was started in 1620. And if I'm not mistaken, so this is 1630s New England. So, yeah, within 15 years of this colony being established, which I think at the time the Plymouth Colony was established, it was a combination of both a business venture and all but name a theocracy. It's the politics and the connections the colonies had with the home country at the time and the way that they operated internally are kind of their own esoteric and convoluted discussion. But effectively, to disagree with the church elders at this time was to excommunicate yourself from the community and to go out on your own, because nobody was going to allow you to participate within that community. In fact, this would happen constantly throughout the history of the colonies. Now, when you have a case like Anne Hutchinson and Roger Sherman, they went and started their own colony because they had enough followers to go with them. That's how Rhode Island was started. But in this case, it's just a single family, so they're kind of on their own.
Yeah, well, you don't want to aggro the mods. Like, just don't do that. Stop pissing off the mods. Like, are you stupid? Why would you do that?
But I guess that's a good way to set it up. So we have a family. They get basically ostracized from the Plymouth Colony, and they go and try to build a home for themselves right next to the woods, and lose a child in the process.
Yeah. So essentially, this is kind of like in a microcosm of what I was talking about with like the Malleus Maleficarum, is that you had people doing their own sort of purity spiraling, where these are extremely devout people. Like, they're not doing a heresy. They are literally like, I have a better understanding, a more strict and literal approach to scripture than you do. You're the one that's the heretic, not me. I'm the one who's on the true path here. And the film sets this up pretty well. Like, this is a very deeply religious family, and they kind of like explore the personal histories of each individual in the family. But I thought the father figure, like what they established for him, like makes a lot of sense. Like, he's very clearly guided by his faith. Like, his faith is extremely important to him. There were a few minor moral ambiguities with him, but his character is quite sensible, just being a very religiously devout Christian. And so,
an interesting interpretation you can derive from that as well, because they are put in danger by the father's devotion to his truth. He is convinced he understands the scripture better than the elders of the colony, and he's willing to pursue that truth and build that life for themselves within that truth outside of it, no matter what the risks are, no matter what might be out there. And you can see within that, I mean, it goes with the whole theme of the themes of civilization versus nature as well. But there's a danger when you isolate yourself for the sake of the truth. And that's what I loved about this movie, is that I was looking at some reviews for it, and I feel like a lot of them missed the point of it. There's a lot of nuance in this movie. It doesn't actually, I don't think he's judging any of these characters or asking you to feel a specific way about that. When you can understand from the father's perspective that he believes this so strongly, and his family is going to go with him. And this is like, if you truly believe, like, I understand scripture this way, it's, you know, you are putting yourself and your family at danger. But sometimes, like, and especially from the way that the Puritans and Calvinists understood things, you cannot put your soul at risk for the sake of getting along.
Yeah. My notes on this were that it's beautifully shot. Like, that's one thing we got to, like, talk about briefly. It's like, the cinematography is fucking gorgeous. It's beautiful. Like, the shots of the forest. This was filmed in Canada, right? Like, he actually had to, he had to go somewhere and find a more natural looking forest. He wasn't satisfied with what was in the United States.
Which is funny, because I think he filmed this in Ontario, Canada, if I'm not mistaken. And Ontario, Canada is generally a very rust belt, very rust belt type area. It's very similar to Michigan and upstate New York, and in many respects, it's also farmland. I mean, don't get me wrong, because I'm sure some of my Canadian listeners are reading right now, but I know there's a lot of farmland out there. But they found a really good place to film this that does give it a New England feel. According to Eggers, it was so isolated that it made the nearest town made New Hampshire look like a metropolis.
Yep. Yeah, and so the opening scene has Thomason in it, and that's kind of like a little bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's a little bit of a foreshadowing that she appears in the first scene. And then this focus on the foreboding forest, and the way the forest, like, he really communicates the language of film, like how dangerous and unknown and scary the forest is. Like, you don't know what's in there, and the forest becomes a huge element of the horror of the movie. And I don't know. It does not. And I keep saying this about The Witch. It does not mess around. It is not trying to hide anything. It puts its cards out on the table from the very get go.
I was shocked when they showed what they did to the baby. I was genuinely shocked by that.
Yeah. Because you've got the youngest child, the baby Samuel. He's kidnapped. He's killed by a witch, and he's used to enchant a flying broomstick. That's what happens.
Yeah.
He's used in a blood ritual to create a fucking flying broomstick. And the visual language they used to show this was, this is why I think this movie is called Elevated Horror, is it doesn't shock you so much with the images. Like, the most shocking thing early on is whenever Thomason is playing peekaboo with Samuel, and then he fucking disappears. He just vanishes. And you as the viewer are like, oh my God.
Especially, and that,
yeah, if you're a parent particularly, like, oh wow, that's scary. And there's no gore, he's just gone.
And well, they do show like droplets of blood as well, which like reifies the shocking image that you've seen. The image of the witch that you do see is very strikingly similar as well to was it? It's a print or a piece that was done by Francisco Goya called Linda Maestra. It's which depicts two witches flying on a broom to towards their witch's Sabbath. It's that's I appreciate there's a lot of little details in this, and that's why that's a big reason why I love this movie, because of the attention to detail that Eggers added to that. And so you have these shocking scenes, and it's that sudden disappearance of the baby, the way he communicates that without lingering on that, it's the way that they set up the horror is just a very interesting way, because think about the different beats that happen in a horror, in a kind of generic horror movie. It's like, oh, there's something a little bit weird going on. We might have a couple of jump scares that are meant to throw you off, that have any horror aspect to it. It's just somebody like they turn around, something like one of their friends is right there.
Yeah, or the film from the very beginning, within the first 10 minutes, it shows you what's actually happening. It straight up shows you, like, there's a witch, and this witch has taken a baby and killed it to be used as part of a spell to create a flying broomstick.
If this had been around. If this had been kind of a standard Hollywood movie, what they would have done is you wouldn't have seen the witch until at least past the actual witch until at least past the halfway point in the movie. There'd be weird things going on, and there would be an expository character that would come up to the, like, would suddenly appear to the family and talk to them about how, oh, there's a witch that lives in those
woods.
And you'd never see that witch.
There's until a witch around these pots.
Yeah, exactly. And then the baby would be at risk at the climax of the movie, and then it would be saved. That would be how a standard Hollywood horror movie
I thought it was really funny reading reviews where people complained about the fact it didn't do that. We should have hidden some of this. Like, no. This film is perfect because it tells you what it's going to do, and then it does it, and it scares the shit out of you.
And he also avoids the problem because in reaction to these generic Hollywood horror movies, there are some directors, and some of the movies are good, but there are some directors that have gotten the idea that to create an atmospheric horror movie, absolutely nothing has to happen. It's just that to make an atmospheric horror movie, I'm going to do some very moody lighting and have a grim soundtrack and have long lingering shots. And maybe I'll do something a little bit interesting with the cinematography. And there's your atmospheric horror movie where nothing really happens. And I subverted your expectations. Like, no, that's not how you do an atmospheric horror movie. The way you do that is that you have the fear of the unknown is an important aspect of the horror genre, but there is also a horror in knowing partially the unknown, and it's the way you build upon that. Even when you know the unknown, if you're hitting upon those primal fears, you can still create very effective horror with that.
Yeah, and that was the thing we talked about too, is that this film does not subvert expectations. There's no subversion. It's very blatant, and if you're paying attention, it tells you exactly what it's doing. It's not hiding a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so early on, we have, within the first 10 minutes, we have some wild stuff going on. So we have the firstborn disappears, but the family doesn't know what happened to him, and this then sets up interpersonal drama within the family relations themselves. And everybody that acted in this deserves some recognition. Everybody just did an amazing job, especially the protagonist. Casting, what is his name? Ralph Ineson, something like that.
Ralph Ineson for the father.
Such a distinctive character.
Yeah, just seeing what else he was in. Yeah, I have no complaints about the cast or anything. Everyone pulled off the role very effectively. Just some of the things early on as well. You have Thomason devoutly praying. I forgot where this exactly happened, but I think in the very opening she's still very devoutly praying before they leave the town council, and her brother Caleb has to come and collect her. And this is, I think, a theme that is very subtly explored in this, because within religious expression you tend to see women will give themselves over much more greatly to a religious fervor than I would say men do, but the other side of that is that they'll tend to give themselves over to religious fervor of any kind if that's the direction they're going into.
You sound like Heinrich Kramer in the Malleus Maleficarum, because he actually makes that point. He's like,
I agree with him.
Women are capable of more depravity and more glory. Like, they go to each extreme further than men.
I genuinely do believe that myself, though. It's just, woman is the Fed poster of the earth, okay? So, and they'll go to whatever extreme they're going in, they'll hit that extreme very hard. So when they're kept on the straight and narrow, on the righteous path, they are the reinforcing aspect of that religion. They maintain, their role as women is generally to be that community nest building aspect to a civilization. They keep that core component within there. They keep people within the rules. But if they are brought over to something else, say that they're brought over to witchcraft or something, they're going to go with that just as fervently as they did if they had been a Calvinist Puritan.
Yeah, so the thing that caught my attention earlier on in the movie is when Caleb starts talking about his fears about the fate of his soul. And this gets into like that purity spiraling about being extremely literalist about your interpretation of scripture. And then his father's not really giving him a completely straight answer on what happens to your soul if you die too young and you haven't been properly saved by the grace of God.
Yeah, and baptized. That's the big sticking point that within the families Samuel had not yet been baptized.
Yep. And I thought that was amazing. I thought that was a really great scene in dealing with those anxieties of what's going to happen to you if you weren't baptized, if you were denied that ritual. I mean, I remember experiencing similar things whenever I was a kid, like thinking about that sort of stuff and agonizing over it.
Well, and what I liked about this as well, and this is another reason why I loved this movie, is because it showed the reality of what it would have been to be religious in the early 17th century. Because there's a very cartoonish way that religion and religious expression, religious belief is depicted. I often bring up this, I bring this up all the time, but Lucian Febvre wrote a book, because there's a debate about if Rabelais, who was a Renaissance figure, if he was an atheist or not, because he tended to mock religion in his writings. And it was called the problem. I think it's called the problem of unbelief in the 16th century. And his argument was, and he went through, he basically took everything from the time that time period and analyzed. And it didn't matter what it was. It could have been like store lists or what, anything that was published, that was written, that he could look at from that time period. He studied it so that he could get a complete picture of what the life, day-to-day life for any person was in that time period. His conclusion was that it just wouldn't be possible for anyone to conceive of themselves as an unbeliever, as an atheist, because religion was just a everyday aspect of their entire lives. It shaped everything about them. And that was true of the Puritans as well, but that does not also mean that people didn't have tension and anxiety with that. And that was, to me, a very brilliant scene of the way that William has no doubts about his faith and what he is doing, but you can see the anxiety as well when he does not want to upset his son with the truth that he knows that his son is damned. And even he doesn't want to face that himself, because that is, again, that goes to the problem of a theme that this movie explores, is that our own truths can scare us very deeply.
Well, that's the interesting about William's character too, is he's actually okay with bending the truth a little bit, because we get into the subject of the mother's cup. Mm-hmm. He's got this cup that went missing, and as it turns out, William sold it so he could buy traps. And then Caleb basically essentially lies to his mom about it, and William lets him do it.
Hey, Potato Smasher.
What's up, fellas?
Hey. I don't know what point you jumped in at, but what we've been talking about so far is a little bit of the history of the Puritans, the beginning of the movie, how much we like this movie. That's really what we've been talking about so far.
Awesome. Yeah. I actually hit you up about it because I do really like this movie. I watched it again not too long ago, but then I watched it again yesterday for homework. I think it's a really good and well done movie. I don't like movies. And so when I watched this and I was really satisfied with it, that's how I knew that it was actually okay.
What about it? I'm just going to give up on the English. I'm going to give up on the English language forever here. What did you like about it?
I thought it was, well, I like the production a lot. I like the scenery creation. It felt really real as far as world building. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It felt like you were in a woods.
Yeah. It felt like you're in a woods in the 1600s after having been kicked out of your Puritan colony.
I spurged out about that for about 10 minutes on how it really did a good job of recreating the Puritan history of the early colonization of New England with the Plymouth Colony. I went on that for about 10 minutes.
Good. Well, then I'm glad we agree. Because, a lot of movies are like, oh, yeah, this is like the Puritan colony. And it's like, I don't know, they'll use words wrong, for the time period, or just things about it, like, don't feel, they don't do a good job of building the world. And it's like, okay, so the plot might have been like good, or the acting may have been fine, but then you just drop the ball in this area and it just breaks it. You know, there's a bunch of shows like that. The autism, I guess, that comes with the territory of being a white nationalist has just ruined my ability to overlook like world breaking insertions.
Well, it's also an insult when they do that, especially if it's our history that they're doing that to. No, it completely diminishes and degrades our history and our understanding of history when things are depicted so just wildly incongruous to what they were. Now, I know that's always been a problem. I'm not going to say like this is something that the Jews have exclusively done, even though there is a reason why they would want to do something like that. I mean, the historical novel, for instance, came about from the first one was really Sir Walter Scott of Ivanhoe. I don't know to what extent that was realistic to the time period he was writing about, but I mean, this how to capture the past has always been a problem in fiction. But I think I would argue very strongly that it comes more alive if it's accurate to the time period and allows you to live a piece of your own history, because then the history becomes same reason why I advocate for Shakespeare being done in the original pronunciation that would have been done at the time. It transports you back to the world of your ancestors and lets you experience it as they experienced life without having to look back judgmentally towards them. And that's our history. That's our heritage. And we should be able to cherish that and depict it how it should be depicted.
Right. At least accurately, if not in an extremely positive light.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think, and you may have talked about this, but Robert Eggers, is he a Jew or not?
No, he's not. No. He's New England blood, from what I can tell. I don't believe he's Jewish. But we were talking, I think, before the show, comparing this movie with Hereditary, which has similar themes and was directed by a Jew.
Yeah, I just watched Hereditary not too long ago. The A24 Studios seems to be putting out some okay content.
I like Hereditary. I actually like it, and like objectively it's very close to The Witch in terms of quality. I like The Witch better, and I have objective and subjective reasons for that. But yeah, so this has been my third viewing of this movie, and I didn't notice until this time around that Mercy the twin, when she starts talking about the disappearance of Samuel, she witnessed the witch doing this, like, and describes what the witch did. And somehow that escaped my notice the first couple of viewings. Like I said,
just in the way that she described it, or can she be like seen in a shot or something?
Yeah, no, it was like I was saying earlier, like the film is not holding anything back. It's not it's not subverting expectations. It's just literally telling you stuff. And Mercy straight up says, oh, yeah, I saw this witch with the broomstick. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what happened. That's what happened in the scene. And this, of course, plays into the film later on where it's kind of clear that the twins have a certain level of corruption.
Well, it seems as the film progresses, the witch gains more and more influence over the entire farmstead. Which is, I mean, pretty clear, right? And yes. children are almost always used in these types of stories as kind of the weakling that gives in to the demon or the witch or whatever.
Well,
their innocence is easy to subvert.
It was also what happened, at least in the most famous incident of witchcraft, of supposed witchcraft in New England in the Salem witch trial. What started it all off was three girls, I think around the ages of 12, where that's what kicked off the whole thing. And if I believe, if you go and look at does the Malleus Maleficarum also talk about it, McNabb? Because I imagine if you look back at the situations of when witchcraft was being talked about in Europe, that a lot of times it involved young girls.
I haven't really gotten to that part. I mean, where he's talking specifically about what age of women, he talks about how women are especially vulnerable to this, and he has like a whole bunch of reasoning behind it. And this ties into the thing we were talking about earlier about how women are capable of like greater heights and lower lows, and of course also their feeble-mindedness and their for the fact that they will fall for stupid stuff. The thing with the Malleus is you're reading it like the sort of the epistemology there is very shaky. It's like he believes astrology can influence you, sort of, kind of, but not really. And you kind of have free will, but also the devil can just basically make you do stuff. That was the thing I thought was very interesting, is you don't really get a good, solid, like, philosophical interpretation of free will and how much control the devil really has over you. Like, it seems vague on those points.
On the other side as well, in terms, I guess on the male side, you have a couple of different themes of like of what sins are allowing this family to be basically preyed upon by this witch. With William, it's his pride.
Yeah.
With Caleb, it's lust. And that's for a young man. That's, you know, I don't think we really need to explain too much how many young men have had their lives destroyed by sexual desire, and the types of witches it's brought them into, you know, brought them into the clutches of. But
Caleb just is lucky that he doesn't have access to Pornhub.
Yeah. No. I was a little bit concerned at first where they were going with him and the way that he was looking at his sister, just because we've seen so many movies where you have the stereotype of religious people and incest.
Well, and incest was common until the black African Kangs taught us not to have sex with our siblings.
True. I read that in a book somewhere.
But the way that's depicted here, I thought it was done very, very well, because it's, I mean, he is a young man who's experiencing his sexual awakening, and he's got no women other than his relatives to look at. I mean, to be realistic, but you can see like he knows it's wrong, and he's also he's struggling with that, just because he's, through no fault of his own, he's going through puberty, but because those desires are there, he allows him to be open to being preyed upon by this witch by taking a form that is just too irresistible.
I mean, I'll throw myself out there to get dunked on, but like, I have some really attractive cousins. And I know that sounds horrible.
Irishness intensifies.
I never like lusted for them, but I remember as a young boy/teen thinking like one day they went from just being my cousin to like, oh wow, they're actually like a cute girl, and thinking to myself like they are my family. I can't think about them in this way, but I can like force myself into objective analysis mode, you know? So yeah. not quite which tier, you know, I'm not stuck out in the middle of nowhere, but
it's, I mean, but yeah, it's a weird thing. And it's like that's the humanity of this film. That's why it's also why I don't think Robert Eggers is Jewish at all, because he cares too much about these characters and he gives them too much humanity and he does not allow them to descend in any kind of a cartoonishness or cliche or anything that you would generally see in media. These are real people. These are real people who have, for their time period, very real issues going on and very real concerns and thoughts.
Yeah. And also, yeah. William is like playing the rational skeptic in this. Like, he's like the Michael Shermer of the family. He's like, nah, I don't believe there's any witchcraft going on here. Get out of here. That's nonsense. Look at the Reddit thread. There's no such thing as witchcraft.
I guess it's something to mention as well that, I mean, the topic of witchcraft has always been controversial in Christianity. It's because, I mean, there are prescriptions against it in the Bible, against sorcery and witchcraft. And certainly there have been within, you know, the pagan traditions, folk magic, and some of that stuff has, folk magic always has survived in some form or another. Oftentimes it's just, it tends to be very peasant superstition type stuff and that was something that the priests of the Catholic Church would often have to correct when they went and ministered to villages, whenever certain types of superstitions or almost folk magic like type practices would crop up, just because, and they'd have to smooth that stuff over. But with the oddly, as I think it's just because Europe came out of these religious wars and out of these plagues, religiosity had gone up and as well, and then literacy was going up as well. More people were having access to books and they were beginning to be very concerned about witchcraft.
Well, I mean, this is where the Malleus comes into play, because up until that point, being a witch just essentially meant you were a primitive practitioner of some kind of folk magic. It didn't mean anything more than that. That was a type of heresy of some sort, but you were just doing whatever the primitive Celtic religions, actually, I shouldn't call them primitive, the enlightened Celtic religions, what they told you to do. It was just a traditional thing. But what Heinrich Kramer was saying is, no, these people, they're not just practicing some kind of folk magic. No, they're in league with the fucking devil. The devil has given them this power over mortals. They have a contract with the devil. That's how they're doing it. So that was sort of the influence from the Malleus Maleficarum, and this does play out in the film explicitly.
Well, you see people gain, you know, as literacy rates go up, the rate of purity spiraling goes up.
Yeah. It's not for nothing that, at least in England, I assume it'd be the same for continental Europe, but I'm more familiar with English Protestantism. It's not for nothing that that Calvinism and a lot of these and a lot of this Protestantism appealed to this upwardly mobile, now literate, industrious craftsman class, and academic class as well.
Ye old middle class.
Literally the middle class. Yeah, Protestantism is part and parcel with the middle class. It's why they called it. It's why they're so synonymous with the bourgeoisie.
So in terms of where we're at in the story, we were discussing about the Samuel gets kidnapped. We have that scene where Thomason is interacting with the twins and with Mercy, and scares Mercy by joking about how she's a witch and she's going to do stuff to Mercy, and Mercy reveals that she's actually seen this witch and stuff. And then we move on a little bit further.
Sorry, I just saw my notes on this. I forgot I wrote this down. I called this movie the Colonial Shining. That's all. Sorry, I had no other place to put that note. In order to put it into the conversation, but yeah, this movie, with the way that it plays with isolation and if people are going crazy or not, and the way that it tries to, like, this area is trying to destroy a family and evil's trying to claim them, very much the Colonial Shining.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a kind of a common like thing to do is have an isolated group or family and their internal dramas and them coming apart at the seams. I mean, the same thing was true of The Thing. This is not like a new idea here. It works. It works really good, but it's not anything different than what's been done before in that regard. Early on, though, they start to point the finger at Thomason, which makes sense. Like, if you understand like the how people thought in that time period, it would kind of make sense that the oldest daughter, who is clearly a woman now, would be the one that might potentially be the focal point of what's happening to the family and what's happening around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they were discussing at one point sending her away too. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't do anything if she's messing with a witch, but send her away.
Yeah. Yeah, and she, of course, finds out about this.
Right.
I don't really have, I don't really have a whole lot about the what happens during the possession, when things start to get really heated up and things start to get really out of control, and you have the disappearance of Caleb and the recriminations upon Thomason as things get worse. Things just begin to escalate worse and worse as the family loses control.
Yeah, the pacing is amazing, but yeah, the things start to escalate. That rabbit is some kind of familiar because there's they're hunting for this rabbit. And then Caleb decides he's going to...
The dog chases it, and then Caleb goes after the dog.
Yep.
And then I'm sure that's your favorite part in the movie, where they find the dog.
Nick Damsel is like, all right, I'm on board. Favorite movie of all time.
Cut the movie there. Roll credits.
We're good. The evil dog has been dealt with. But yeah, so Caleb at that point runs into the witch, and then the witch hexes him, and this is like sort of the...
Oh, she hexes him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like my notes on that too about the scene with Caleb and this witch like working her arts upon him, that was amazing. Like that was some edge of the seat kind of stuff. Like that was such a solid scene. And there's a lot of visual stuff going on. That's the other thing with the witch. Like, I want to watch it again and really pay attention to the visual stuff, because you look at the way certain scenes are shot, what's in the background, and the imagery back there, and there's like this whole like visual subtext of the film that would be easy to miss out on.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that. I'd like to watch it and not watch anything at the forefront and just nothing but background.
Yeah.
And I wrote down one specific line from this as a great foreshadowing. We will conquer this wilderness. It will not consume us. And obviously within the movie itself, it does consume them. It destroys the entire family, kills all of them. Well, actually, Mercer, we don't even know what happens to...
No, we don't.
We don't know. Was it both twins that we don't know what happened to them, or was it just...
Sure. No, they both just vanished.
Yeah, we don't know what happens to the twins, but they might as well just be dead. And this wilderness has consumed them, and it's claimed Thomason for itself, because even though she is making this pact with Satan at the end... She is going into the wild. She has given in to the base nature that's within people, but there's a certain way that it's expressed in women that she takes upon this and goes in there, and she is consumed by that. But you can also see this as... I tend to view a lot of movies that are set accurately in America to also be about America, even... to this day, and it's we thought we could conquer this wilderness, and it's slowly retaking bit by bit parts of the United States again. It is consuming us, and whether that's the wilderness, the actual physical wilderness, or the wild nature of humanity, the more primitive aspect of it, United States is being consumed by it.
This country's hard on people, as they say, no country for old men.
Yep.
Oh, this is pretty funny. My note about didst thou make some unholy union with that goat? the twins were obviously corrupted, and like I was mentioning earlier, like Mercy talking about seeing the witch and the witch's ritual where she enchants the broomstick and all that. But there's that scene after the Caleb death scene type thing, where Thomason tries to get the twins to say the Lord's Prayer or something like that, and they can't say it. They actually cannot physically say the Lord's Prayer or whatever the religious catechism was. Like, they can't make their mouth do that. And I'm like, the twins, they were corrupted. See, like, the film was not jerking you around at all. Like, it laid it out very early on that something's wrong with them. And there it is. Like, they are in some sort of communion with this goat.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say they have a special connection with Black Phillip.
Black Phillip.
They dance around and sing about him through the whole movie. And, my guess on what happens to the twins, I don't think they're dead. Well, they might be dead by the end of the movie. I think they were taken by a witch, because at one point, there's the hole in the goat shed, and that's kind of when the twins are gone. And I could only assume, I think it was after the one witch comes and drinks the goat's milk or whatever.
When things were starting to escalate. Like, after Caleb has the possession or whatever, the witch working upon him from afar, like, after that, things start escalating fast. Thomason and the twins get locked in the shed with the goat.
Yep.
And I'm like, what? You're going to lock them in the shed with the goat? Really? You fucking kidding me? Like, that was like the one moment where, like, the traditional horror film, like, cliches started to kick in a little bit. Like, oh, yeah, you're going to put them in there with the goat that you potentially suspect of being a demon. Okay.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's do that. And then, of course, the witch comes in there, and there's this horrifying scene with her drinking or disemboweling from goat. Yeah. Yeah.
My assumption is that the twins are taken by a witch and probably used in the ritual at the end of the movie. Because, I mean, all the witches are, like, covered in blood, and we don't know exactly where it came from. And...
No, I agree. I think that's probably what happened.
Yeah. So or they're just taken in, and they'll be raised to be used later for whatever. But
there's another powerful scene where William is, like, praying to God to spare his children. I was like, that's pretty fucking, like, serious. Like, that was very
I guess we can talk now about I love the ending, the last two scenes. I know some people that felt that it should have ended with her walking into the woods and just cut right there. I know people
we can't skip the boob pecking scene.
Okay.
And that does tie into the Malleus Maleficarum.
Do go on, please.
What happened with that is, and he talks about, like, Heinrich Kramer talks about this, like, witches can essentially work upon you in such a way that you become possessed with, like, an anger or a lust. And that's what happened to the mother. I forget what her name is, but that scene is basically her being worked on by these witches to then become irrationally rageful against her daughter. And then we have that wild ending where, what is it, Black Phillip kills William. And then that scene with Thomason and her mother. I thought that was one of the most tastefully done things I've seen in a horror film. Where she ends up killing her mother. And the way they shoot it, you see, like, she had a facial slash and she's, like, bleeding on her daughter, but then they don't really show you all of the gruesome detail of the mother being stabbed to death. It was so tastefully shot. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. So good. And now I guess we can talk about the actual ending.
Yeah. I loved it. It's everyone knows what a girl loves is butter. No, but that makes sense. I mean, just because of butter would be a luxury. So imagine if you were thriving on what they were thriving on, and somebody says, "Would you like the taste of butter?"
Wouldst thou like the taste of butter and pretty dressed? Wouldst thou like to live deliciously?
Well, most interesting to me, and this is why I'm convinced Eggers is definitely making some kind of comment about today, is when he offers her if she would like to live deliciously and see the world. I was like, would you like to become a travel hag?
Yeah.
Would you like to become a cool wine aunt?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the whole thing with, like, them making the contract with the devil, which is how witches derive their power. It's like, you got to sign your name in this book right here. Yeah, you put your name right there. I can't sign my name. No, I'll help you.
Yeah, which is, that's the, when you look at what were the tales of the witchcraft at the time this came up in the Salem witch trials as well, is that there is this constant focus on signing your name in the devil's book and making this pact with him. And
that's Black Philip is the devil, but clearly the Jew in the movie, right? I'm going to subvert your daughter, get her naked, and help her sign her life away.
Yeah, you basically described it, McNabb, the before I watched it, as a daughter that's tricked into joining Antifa.
I mean, that's sort of the thing about the film that people have said, oh, this is like anti-white or subversive. Like, no, it's really not, because like the point of the film is that these witches, or in this case, I think it's one witch that's primarily responsible, but she does all of this crazy stuff to this family, kills their baby, and the taking of the baby and sacrificing it, that was early on, that was a way to break apart the family. Like, that was the entire point, was to, that was a psychological warfare, and then to turn the family against Thomason so that Thomason would then join with the rest of the witch coven.
You could see that, you could see the disappearance of the baby as a metaphor for abortion.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I didn't think that the film was anti-white the first time I watched it, and I still don't, having watched it a few more times now. The family is portrayed as the clear victims, you know?
Yeah.
They're sympathetic characters. You're supposed to feel bad that their entire life is being destroyed by this subversive evil.
The only reason why I think people might have struggled with it is just because the religion and the religious expression in this is just that alien to them. They can't. It's, and I can understand for some people that can be difficult to see that, like, why are they like this? Why do they believe like this? And that's the thing, is like, when you don't have an understanding of what a person's belief structure is, it can be very hard to relate to them on some level, and so you have to retreat to much more of the conceptual model of things. But these aren't conceptual people, these are very real people.
Yeah, I didn't think it was judgmental at all about religion. I thought it was a pretty honest portrayal of being a religious fundamentalist.
Yeah, and I think the movie does a good job of setting the stage for that, because it's part of why they were banished/left town. I can't remember exactly what it says, but during one of the scripture readings at the beginning, they're basically like, what did we leave the old country for? And so you could tell that, like, William is clearly prideful and purity spiraling. And I think that's what got them kicked out. But they were way too hardcore fundamentalist even for the new world that they've tried to build.
This is an interesting comment I found from it looks like this is a paper called Primal Roots of Horror, or maybe it's a book, Primal Roots of Horror Cinema, Evolutionary Psychology and Narrative of Fear by Carol Fry. On the opposite side, Satan's temptation of Thomason also acquires traits of ideological grooming, slowly alienating her from her family in a way that has been compared to Islamic online grooming or jihadi wives. Not the example I would have gone with. Not the example.
I would have used maybe, I don't know, the Jewish producer or something.
Like, yeah. Yeah. That's the example I probably would have gone with.
Hollywood, turn of the century.
Well, I was very fascinated by some of the reactions to this movie from the press, from different aspects of the press, and it was interesting to me how much this movie seems to have been misunderstood, even by people who really should know better. I saw a review on Plugged In, which is it's published by Focus on the Family. And this guy, Adam R. Holtz, criticized it, saying that William is absolutely devoted to leading his family in holiness in the ways of the Lord, which should be a good thing. But the fruit of William's rigorous focus on dogmatic piety isn't a lifting of burdens, which we're told should happen in Matthew 11:30, or a joyful celebration of living life to the fullest, as is referenced in John 10:10. Rather, is deep fear and morbid meditations on hell, damnation, and the forces of spiritual darkness. You've never talked to a Calvinist, have you, Adam Holtz?
The Bible told me to put something in my butt. This movie is horrible.
I highly recommend if anyone is a little bit is just doesn't understand this, go talk to a Calvinist who knows their theology. They go look at what the at what. So if you're not familiar with Calvinism, they have a way of explaining their tenets, which is an acronym called TULIP. And it's a condensed way of explaining the 5 points of Calvinism. And the points are total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, and preservation of the saints. And if you look at the way they describe total depravity, it's very dour. That means simply man is dead. The Bible says that you and I are dead in trespasses and sins unless we are born again. Dead, more than that, the man or woman who is dead in sin hates God, and his carnal mind is enmity against God. His will is stubbornly steeled against God. This is why one of the reasons why Calvinists have their predestination theology, because man is just that depraved that it takes the overwhelming will and force of God to lift man out of his state of death and sin, and even then he already knows who his elect is.
Yeah, that's at odds with what Heinrich Kramer is writing about, because he clearly believed in free will. It was just muddy as far as
Kramer wrote that book before the Protestant Reformation. Yeah. The Malleus Maleficarum was written in 1485, which was about 40 years before, or not, for the Protestant Reformation started in 1517. So about 30 years before the Protestant Reformation even started. So yeah. There was no Protestant church at that time, but many of the Protestants would take the Malleus Maleficarum and other stuff and begin to incorporate many of the many different ideas and attitudes into.
They would do more sophisticated, refined purity spirals.
Reaching levels of purity spiraling that shouldn't even be possible, and now there's a whole church dedicated to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things I learned about when I was reading the Malleus Maleficarum is that if you have erectile dysfunction, you might want to make sure there's not a witch that's messing with you.
Is she also the cure for it?
Oh, my God. There's this whole thing. He spends way too much time on this topic. And the point he was making is that with witches, they will make it so that you can't function with your wife or whoever, but you will be able to be functional with other women, and that's how you can tell that you've been a victim of witchcraft. Now, if you just have a global issue with erectile dysfunction, that's just on you. But if it's with a specific woman, particularly your wife, that's witchcraft.
Gonna have to go check the woods out.
So this is an interesting article from Vox. Why Satanists have given new horror movie The Witch their endorsement?
Because they've gotten into farming lately.
This was so fucking gay.
I know. On February 3rd, just a reminder, the Church of Satan was founded by Anton Levy. So, he looks like Fat Lenin in some pictures.
I actually worked with a dude that looked like Anton Levy. Was not Jewish, though. Is a race mixer.
Oh, no, that's right. No, I'm not even going to give him Anton. I believe his first name was actually Howard. Howard Levy.
Ooh, I didn't know his name. Well, I guess I probably read that, but I always forget. Yeah. Everybody knows him by Anton. So.
Yeah, Howard Levy. On February 3rd, the upcoming indie horror film The Witch benefited from the sort of publicity that Studio A24 might have shied away from even 10 years ago. The movie was officially endorsed as a satanic experience by the Satanic Temple. In a statement, the temple said it believed the witch will signal the call to arms for a satanic uprising against the tyrannical vestiges of bigoted superstitions and will hearken a new era of liberation and unfettered inquiry. Okay, but I'm going to skip ahead to the this was where it kind of got interesting. So why Satanists are embracing the witch? A24 could have just as easily courted the approval of, say, theologians who have a fondness for Calvinism. The Witch takes place in colonial America, and it unfolds from the perspective of period Christians who genuinely believe the woods around their tiny farm contains some sort of evil supernatural being, and are ultimately proved correct. I'll just read this. But again, this is a horror film, and thus taking the side of satanic forces is probably a better promotional peg
for fans of the genre. Also, it's intriguing to see how A24, which dangles the Satanic Temple endorsement as a promotional get, and the temple itself differs somewhat in their approach to the film. A lot of that stems from the difference between public perceptions of Satanism, which tend toward the dark, and what the temple says it believes, which is that theocratic patriarchy has created a society that's untenable to everybody who's not already in power. Just a reminder, if anybody doesn't know this, the Satanic Temple was started by a Jew named Howard Levy, Anton LaVey, and it's just it's just edgier Randianism. That's all it is.
That's like Ragnar Redbeard. Yeah. Davis Arrhenius formed that, right?
What? Might is right by Davis Arrhenius?
Being the Merciless, Davis Arrhenius, like Howard Levy, they all look kind of like the same.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I found very aggravating too, is like, so Satanism is essentially, it's like Ragnar Redbeard on steroids. Like, I was watching a Styx Hexenhammer video, and he was explaining his Satanism, doing what he called a satanic prayer, is praying to himself, because to Satanists, they are their own God. And I'm like, it's not what I would call Satanism. Like, to me, yeah. Satanism would be you're invoking a demon like Asmodeus or something, and you're literally worshiping the devil. Like, by that standard, because I have this thing, I have the Latin text of my name is Legion, for we are many. I have that as a Halloween decoration. I would be more of a Satanist than somebody like Styx Hexenhammer.
Somebody's going to take that out of context.
I know, right? They're going to be like,
I can't remember if it was the Satanic Temple or somebody else or that did that. Because I remember this came up in when I was living in Detroit. They had the statue of Baphomet or Baphomet, however you pronounce, whichever way you prefer to pronounce it, that was set up in the city of Detroit. That or it was originally supposed to go. It was originally created like to protest one of these Middle America courthouses or something that allowed religion, like they had to allow any religion to put that there. And so the Satanic Temple or something similar to them had the statue of Baphomet cast, which, that's for, if people don't know what that is, that's the goat looking guy that's got the breasts and is kind of sitting cross-legged. That's actually got a really weird and convoluted history, right, because the name Baphomet is probably derived from Mahomet, and this is supposedly extends back to the Knights Templar and how they trained, preparing to deal with having to commit blasphemies when fighting the Muslims during the Crusades, because they didn't say Muhammad, they said Mahomet, and that got corrupted to Baphomet. That's the one of the supposed etymologies of it. But at some point in the 19th century, I think it was like a French Jew created the image of the goat demon guy that got the name Baphomet.
I don't know why you mentioned it being a French Jew. That seems like a coincidence.
I think it was a French Jew. Let me see. I'm going to assume it's a French Jew by the name Eliphas Levy. I'm going to guess it's probably Jewish.
You might be wrong about the French.
he's definitely from France. Do they list him as Jewish? They do not list him as Jewish on his Wikipedia. Interesting. He was born Alphonse Louis Constant. That might be why. So wait, so this guy was LARPing as a Jew, maybe? Is that what happened here?
A reverso instead of a converso.
But anyways, I'm giving you way up. That's amazing. He's known as the Sabbatic Goat, but he created that. Anyways, the Satanic Temple had that statue or something related to them, and I just remember. I don't know why did I even bring this up. I don't know.
The statue of Baphomet, because that's like it's worshiping demons and stuff instead of worshiping yourself like a gay retard.
Oh, I think the reason why I was bringing it up, because it's often associated with the Baphomet thing. It's often considered like a form of demon worship, but it's, when you even look at the history of that, it's like a hermetic and occultic type thing that doesn't even have the history that people attach to it. So even these satanic temple type retards, they just take on edgy imagery and they don't even know the history of any of that stuff.
Well, that's to bring up Hereditary again real quick. Like the cult in Hereditary is legitimately like a satanic cult, yes, worshiping one of the kings of hell.
Yep.
Not just like having gay butt sex and ordering things on Amazon.
Which, if you worship one of the kings of hell, you are going to have gay butt sex in hell anyway. So you, if you're going to do that, you might as well do the do the first part first.
We need a. It's time for the Satanic Reformation.
No, it's past time. Satanic Reformation. It's like Satanism is like the hot topic of religion right now.
That'd be a pretty sweet grift. We should do it.
I'm okay. I don't think my priests would like that. So I think I'm gonna have a hard pass on that.
I've heard people say about Hereditary, like there's actual legit like satanic stuff with like Paimon and all of that. Like there's some of the stuff that's featured in the film is like legit.
Yeah, no, it's all super legit. As far as I can tell, I read a bunch about it and some of the, you know, where a lot of the setting comes from for the movie, and it's all like legit Christian demonology stuff, which is super interesting. I don't know enough about it, but Walrus could probably do a really artistic deep dive on it.
Now, I'm going to be more curious to know if there has actually been a tradition of unironic Satanists that worshipped actual satanic entities and tried to summon them into the world and make compacts with them. I would be interested to know if that was really a thing. Or
I would imagine like random retards have done stuff like that. I mean, you had King James I was deeply interested in demonology. Obviously, he was. I don't think he was trying to summon demons. I think he was, because demons are interesting. It's a forbidden topic. It's an interesting topic. I'm sure there are people that have taken Christian sources on demonology and have attempted their own rituals to try and summon demons. Some random retards, I'm sure, have tried to do that. I don't think there's any hidden secret tradition of Satanism that's been like passed down through the ages, but how would I know? I mean, I would have thought that the world is ruled by a cabal of Satan of satanic pedophiles, and yet here we are. So what do I know? I could be totally wrong on this. Maybe there is a satanic tradition that's gone. Oh wait, it's called Judaism. Never mind.
I mean, the satanic stuff is like, that's the first Fed posters. It's like, what are you doing? You can't do that. No, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to get like trouble with God, the ultimate moderator, if you keep doing that.
This is I'm just going to go back to this article for a second here, because there's some interesting stuff here. When viewed through the lens of the Satanic Temple, spokesperson Jex Blackmore told me it's a film about what happens when you realize the Christian patriarchy has some serious problems. The film itself shows the results
of your entire family is murdered.
The film itself shows the results of a patriarchal theocratic society in the microcosm of the family, Blackmore told me. Blackmore especially appreciated the way the film played up the inherent feminist tension in the very idea of a witch. There is an interest in controlling a female figure and in dictating to her what her role is in a society that benefits males, she told me. And a witch, even in colonial folktales that demonize such a figure, stands outside of that. So, wait, so are you saying that that feminists are inherently satanic witches?
Hold up. Are we talking about the movie where these females, these witches, killed a baby and then mercilessly destroyed a family and killed them too?
I told you it was a metaphor for abortion.
How can you twist that to be about the patriarchy? Like, no, fuck you. Like, we have not watched the same movie.
Here's where the article gets really interesting. Why A24 sent the film to the Satanic Temple in the first place. The final piece of this puzzle is that A24 isn't shying away from the temple's endorsement. Indeed, Blackmore told me the studio actually approached the temple to say it believed the film would be of interest to members, though it didn't specifically ask for an endorsement. In the past, and especially in the 80s, an endorsement of this sort probably would have led to the studio trying to distance itself from said endorsement, or at most subtly encouraging it behind the scenes. All right. Instead, A24 has let the temple host several screenings of the film, complete with rituals performed post-screening. And notably, there's been very little controversy at all, although it is likely that the temple's endorsement hasn't been noticed mostly by film fans and hasn't, say, made the leap into the mainstream that might land it on the radar of the remaining Christian culture war leaders, like Pat Robertson of the 700 Club. I wonder how many people...
Hold up. The remaining leaders.
Yes.
It's been destroyed. Like, there is no opposition to this. Like, you're fighting a battle against an enemy that's been routed. So I don't even know what you're doing.
I wonder how many people from the conservative Christian community are aware of this film, are aware of our endorsement of it, Blackmore told me. Since the primary audience for the film seems to be horror fans, Blackmore suggests that the temple's endorsement could be advantageous for A24's marketing. Mm. But she also hopes the film will spur conversations about the separation of church and state. The marketing effort is also indicative of how Christian conservatives have largely given up on waging a wide-scale war against pop culture, where they used to regularly call for boycotts of films they disagreed with or argue that Harry Potter promoted witchcraft. They now mostly attempt to warn their own followers against seeing those films. Most recently, particular ire was reserved for 50 Shades of Grey. The culture wars haven't ended entirely, but the days when reflexive protest against supposedly anti-Christian works could turn into massive news stories are mostly over. And in that world, it's a lot easier to openly and gladly promote the witch as a satanic experience.
Mostly over? It's completely over. It's completely over. Like, the so-called religious right was annihilated. They were routed. They have no power. They have no fucking power whatsoever. This reminds me of what was we were talking about Christopher Lash, and he had this observation that so-called radical left is always trying to like beat the war drum against things that have been destroyed.
Yeah.
Harry Potter was kind of the last stand of any religiosity. Like, and
they were right. Harry Potter turned their kids gay.
Just a bad film with bad actors and characters. It's just awful.
They were absolutely right.
Yeah, you're so right. Fuck Harry Potter.
I don't have anything else other than I want to ask you about your I'm going to ask you about your paranormal experience, McNabb, but Potato Smasher, since you came in late, was there anything that you wanted to cover that we haven't covered yet on talking about this film?
No, I'm pretty happy. Sorry about being late, by the way.
It's okay.
We went to dinner and picked up the kids, and then about 10 miles up the highway, there was a overturned truck that we got to sit behind for quite some time. So. And I already listened to all my podcasts this week.
I guess one other thing I could ask you as well, because we were talking before, you've been doing anything for Halloween this month? Watch any movies? Because McNabb's got his 31 days of Halloween going on. My wife and I have been, when we have time together, we try to watch a Halloween movie.
Yeah, I watched It Follows when I was out at work pre-chiseling. We were watching a scary movie every night.
The chiseling.
And then the wife and I, we were watching, I can't remember, it's Netflix, I know, Drag Me Over the Coals, but it's a shared account.
I'm calling DK right now.
Okay, it's fine. you wouldn't beat up somebody with one arm, would you?
I'm making a horror movie called The Chiseler.
The Great Chiseling?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, The Chiseler would be great. That's a good film.
The great chiseling Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown walks on screen with one arm, one arm just dangling with it no longer functioning.
It's the great pumpkin face, Charlie Kirk.
But I'm sorry, I interrupted. What were you?
We started at The Haunting of Bly Manor, or at Bly Manor, something like that. I don't know, it's not too bad. There's a little bit of race mixing, but it's pretty spooky so far. We haven't finished it. I don't know how many episodes there are, but the episodes are an hour each and pretty decent building so far. Very slow crescendo. I can respect it so far. It hasn't disgusted me, and that's pretty much my go-to as far as is it okay or not. If I'm not immediately disgusted, then it's bearable. and we watched Hereditary the other day. I really liked Hereditary, actually. I also liked It Follows. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Yeah, I did a pause button on it.
It's not. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's not, you know, super spooky, but it made me do a big think. A lot of questions on how this thing acts. But yeah, we're doing it. We're doing the bit. I love Halloween.
We've been other than the movies, we've also been doing literature since we're big audiobooks and reading books people in this house. My wife apparently reads the Something Wicked This Way Comes every Halloween, so she's in the middle of that read again. I've never read it. She highly recommends it. It's by Ray Bradbury. So that's if people are looking for some Halloween literature. I always go over Lovecraft this time of year. Just redid The Shadow Over Innsmouth. If you're looking for a horror story that's against race mixing, and as well, and then I also did At the Mountains of Madness.
Madness is really good.
I don't have any Lovecraft. I don't have any spooky books, actually.
Get some Lovecraft. Some of the shorter stories to start off with, if you're not used to his writing. His writing is very good. It's just he did still write somewhat like he was from the Victorian era, so some of that stuff kind of carries over with the verbiage that he uses and the way he writes. But his stories are genuinely very, very good. Some of the shorter stuff is very good to get into. Shadow Over Innsmouth is generally not, I think, a first-time Lovecraft story. I think I would usually recommend, but I love Shadow Over Innsmouth so much that I just can't help but constantly recommend it, just because of it's. Like I said, it's one of the only horror stories I think you'll ever read where it's about the fear of miscegenation.
Yeah, there's a film adaptation of that. They don't call it The Shadow of Innsmouth. It's Dagon, which is a different story. But they call
Which is one of his shorter works as well.
Yeah, it's The Shadow of Innsmouth, though, is the story that's done. And that's a guilty pleasure of mine. I love that movie.
Yeah, Spanish-language film, as I recall.
Yeah. Well, it was filmed in Spain. All the versions I've seen are in English. But
oh, okay.
And there are Spanish actors and actresses in it, but...
Oh, it might be one of those situations like with the spaghetti westerns where it ends up being dubbed over.
It's an English director, a horror director. Not to pull this up real fast. But yeah, it's one of the better, I think, Lovecraft horror films as far as like an introduction to his themes. The Void would be another one. Yeah, Stuart Gordon directed it, and of course he was like involved with like Reanimator and stuff like that.
Isn't that the Reanimator guy? Yep. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know he did Dagon. Okay, now I definitely have to see it.
I recommend it. It's kind of a B movie in terms of some of the effects are not the greatest, but It's charming. I find it very charming. I enjoy that movie a lot.
Yeah, no, I definitely had to say I had no idea he was involved in that he directed Dagon, because I had seen clips of it, and I just never ended up watching it.
I watch it usually whenever my house is being flooded. It's like, oh yeah, there's a river in my driveway. I should probably watch Dagon now. The right thing. So yeah, Halloween to me is a huge thing. It all started when my wife would take me to King's Dominion because she had like this pass to it, like around October, and we would do the haunted attractions and stuff there and roller coasters, and that's what kicked it off. And then of course I had Shane in September, so his first holiday was Halloween, and Halloween has gotten bigger and bigger every year. Yeah, I'm sure people have seen my makeup from last year, and I decorate my house. Cable networks have done 31 days of Halloween forever. So essentially October 1st through 31st, my place is fully decorated and I do movies and stuff nonstop. And you were asking about paranormal experiences. Well, I used to do volunteer EMS at a rescue squad, Shawlsville Rescue. Shawlsville is named after the Shawnee Indians. And the story is there's Indian burial grounds and stuff all around that place. And whenever I was first volunteering there, they would tell me about the surveillance footage that they had of energy balls and things like that floating around the station and just weird stuff happening. And then someone was like, oh yeah, look out for the ghost cat. I'm like, what do you mean by ghost cat? You know, and I thought they were just trying to mess with like the new person, right? And then I experienced this ghost cat sleeping on my legs one night. And after that, I was like, all right, maybe there's a little something that's paranormal stuff. Like this freaking ghost cat. Like, that was real. Like, there was something on my legs. Like, I woke up in the night, and there was, like, a presence there, right? And I was a little freaked out. I was like, that was not, like, me dreaming. That was not, like, the power of suggestion. There was something there. That was odd. and everyone's story about their experiences, it all gelled together. It was not like certain Holocaust stories where there's a variance between people's accounts. Like, everybody's account sounded very similar. The things they would describe lined up. And I'm like, all right, maybe there's a little something to that stuff.
Converging evidence?
Yes. Convergence of evidence, yes. Like, actual convergence of evidence. Like, as in the evidence, like, it all tied together and there was no contradictions, that kind of thing. So that was my first experience with that. But then I have some friends, and they moved into that area. And we did a haunted house thing last night. And whenever we all got together to do that, my buddy was like, oh, yeah, man. So we've got these black bears that have been a problem around here. And I have a surveillance video of the bears that's pretty wild. This white thing came down out of the sky and essentially, like, turned this bear away. I'm like, oh, a white thing? Like, what, an egret or something? Like, they're like a bird?
A Klansman?
Yeah, like a Klansman. Like, what are you talking about? So then he shows me the footage, and you see this black bear, and the black bear is around his house. It's getting closer to his porch. And then, I don't know how to describe this, but a ghost jumps off of his roof in front of the bear, like, just comes down from the sky. The bear looks at it and then turns around and goes the other way, and the thing, like, slowly fades away, like, it dissipates, and you see the after image of it, and it's like a white, like, sort of a human shape. And I was, well, that's wow, that's a fucking ghost. I don't know what to say.
Alex McNabb has officially seen more evidence of a ghost for a ghost than he has seen for the Holocaust.
No, for real. For real. And I contacted the paranormies. I literally contacted the paranormies about this. I'm like, I saw footage of a ghost, and this is an area where I had a paranormal experience. Like, it's the same area. So, I don't know. Call me a convert, whatever. But, like, I'm definitely open to the idea that this stuff is real.
Well, is it a safe assumption that the ghost would probably be an Indian?
I don't know.
Is that an official endorsement of white people from Indians?
I don't know, because the theory that my friend had is he had apparently taken a pot shot at this bear and missed. And it's like, you know, I think it's a Native American type thing, and these spirits are protecting the bears. So since then, I have not messed with any of these bears. I'm just, like, not trying to, like, call the, like, these Native American, like, spirit things into my house and be eviscerated by them. So, but yeah, I'm actually very open to the idea, like, this paranormal stuff. I don't have, like, any commitments in denying that shit. Like,
well, if the reaction to the witch from the Satanic Temple and others have shown us anything, that is that there truly is a spiritual battle being waged between Satanists and everybody else, and whether you or not you believe it, they do.
They do.
Yeah, they're fighting on the side of cringe, and cringe always loses.
I'm gonna when I get my baby baptized, I'm gonna have to ask the father, can you add something in there about protecting him against cringe as well?
Lead me not into cringe.
against Satan's cringe.
Can you work something about being forgiven for your cringe into the Lord's Prayer?
Forgive us our cringe as we forgive those who cringe against us.
Lead us not into temptation and deliver us from all cringe.
Well, I have nothing else on this. Thank you very much for coming on, guys. I obviously, big endorsement from all of us on this movie. Well, I know we all love it.
What's the final score here on a 1 to 10?
I don't do that. You can score if you'd like.
I'll give it a 10. I'm actually up into a 10 plus on that. I definitely give it a 10. It's a
10. It's a double plus 10 good.
It's potentially in the top five for Halloween, certainly. It's top five, maybe in horror films of all time. I would consider making that top five. I don't know. There's so much competition in that slot. Who knows?
It's a Puritan horror movie. It's one of my favorite. Therefore, it's one of my favorite movies I've seen in a long time. It's like they got together. It's like, let's make a movie for Borzoi. Let's make a movie specifically for him. I love it. It's a great movie.
I don't rate movies on a scale of 10 anymore. I just have ones and zeros, or watch and do not watch. and definitely get to watch. I'll create a new category for it. One plus, it's movies that you should watch and can watch again.
There we go.
It's not bad.
Well, with that, I think the next episode, by the way, is going to be in education. If I can get DK and Blauergeist together, I'm hoping next week and I can get that one. But we'll see what happens. But with that, I'm going to push the pause button on this.